listen to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
All right. Welcome to episode 147 of Rogue Startups. Craig and I are now off of our brief hiatus from travel and kids and other miscellaneous assorted things that got in our way. How the heck are you, Craig?
Man, I'm good. I'm good. You know, it's funny. We were talking before we started recording about prioritization, and I think we'll definitely have an episode on this, how you and I both do it poorly, speaking for myself at least, in the future. Yeah. But, yeah, I just got a lot of plates spinning right now. So, yeah, the apologies for the brief hiatus on the podcast, but Dave and I both have a lot of stuff going on right now in our businesses. And so, yeah, sometimes the podcast has to take a back seat to other stuff that's going on. So apologies, but we're glad to be back this week. And I think we have an exciting topic to talk about. That, you know, it bridges the gap a little bit from, like, where we are right now to being able to talk about and look at a company that we both admire a lot. And maybe some of the stuff, like, how can we get to where they are by mimicking some of the things they're doing. So, yeah, I'm excited to talk about this today.
Yeah, so the impetus for this episode right here was one of the recent tweets from Joel at Buffer, where they published their, you know, salary reports. I mean, they're open about everything, which is unbelievable that these guys had the moxie to do this. I would never be able to do this. Never. Not. Yeah. There's no way. This would never happen in any startup I would ever run. I just couldn't do this. I don't have the chops to do this kind of transparency. But these guys do, which is really cool. And I'm sure as a listener, you've probably, unless you've been hiding under a rock, you've seen these. But the one that they just published most recently about transparency specifically had to do about their marketing budget. And I thought this was fascinating because I don't think I've ever seen anybody else ever publish what their marketing budget looks like, what they're spending it on, and then you sort of match that up to the salaries and the people and the titles of what they're doing, and you kind of get a map of their inner workings here.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, have you seen this anywhere else, Craig?
No, for sure. I mean, because it's like, it's a question that I ask of a lot of people. It's like, how do you acquire customers? What does marketing look like for you? So, yeah, I mean, I think marketing is a really nebulous thing. You know, hey, we do marketing. What does that mean, right? For me, right? And, like, if you asked me, how do you do marketing for Podcast Motor, I would say, we don't. And that's really sad, right? Now, how do you do marketing for Castos? We're just starting to figure it out of, like, a way to predictably and repeatably get new customers. And then, this is the thing, how do you have the confidence to do more of that knowing that it's going to pay off? And you have to spend more money upfront, and the payoff might not come for some time. But, I mean, Buffer has figured this out, and so now they spend almost six figures a month on marketing, right? And they have the history and the confidence to say, okay, we're going to spend $93,000 in August, to know that over some period of time we're going to be paid back a lot more than that. Because, I mean, Buffer is a mega profitable business. I mean, they have this figured out, that, like, their ROI on this is really solid. But Dave, I think for me, the article is really interesting, just to get a real, like you said, like a real concrete glimpse of like what a very successful company does. But even more so, I think I try to translate parts of this to, like, what am I doing, you know, like, say with Castos, like, what am I doing with Castos, which is definitely like peewee football compared to the NFL that they're playing in. But like, how can I take some of the best practices and the examples that they've laid out to say, like, okay, as we go from where we are now to where I want to be, you know, doing whatever, $1 million a month or something like they're doing, how can we track on that path? So that was, like, the most interesting thing for me. But, and there's, like, I think there's two huge realizations that we draw from this article, right?
Well, certainly there's a couple that really stand out. But let's throw out some numbers here so our listeners are not in the dark about what we're looking at. And we'll link to this as well so you can see the whole report and draw your own conclusions from it. But Buffer spent $93,653 in August on their marketing, just the marketing.
And just in August.
and just in August, too. So they're doing, you know, I assume that this is an average month. You know, they didn't really lay that out to say this was a high month or a low month or whatever. The whole gist of the article was sort of like, oh, this is sort of an average day for us here. Yay. So I'm assuming that these numbers are typical, not extremes. Anyway, so they broke it down by high-level categories, and this is where some real aha moments came for me. So their biggest expense by far, and this is not a surprise at all, is payroll, to the tune of a little over $73,000, and that's salaries, contractors, and miscellaneous stuff. And if you break that down, they say that there's 10 people in their marketing department, total like 7 full-time, 3 contractors, so that's 10. That's like $7,300 a month on average, which translates to about $83,000 a year, $87,000, I forget, mm-hmm. I just calculated mm-hmm. that a minute ago and forgot what it was. But anyway, if you look at the salary reports for Buffer, these numbers pretty much line up. So, you know, I don't think Buffer's lying to us or anything like that. I wouldn't expect them to. But that's a lot of scratch to be spending on marketing every month. $73,000 to have 10 people working on it in a dedicated fashion. That's the part that shocked me, was that a company of Buffer's size has 10 dedicated marketers. And we actually took a look to the salary report here to figure out what are their varying roles and titles and stuff like that. There's one manager, so 10% of that is managing. And then of the rest of them, you've got 2 content marketers, 2 people that are dealing with, quote, community. One's a strategist, one's a champion. One that's dealing with partnerships, one that's dealing with PR, and one that's onboarding specialist and product marketer, and then somebody who's a full-stack marketer, which I still don't understand what the fuck that means. Yeah. Does that mean they're just running around doing whatever they need to do? Or
yeah, I mean, that's the jack-of-all-trades kind of guy. But he's not super low-paid. He's kind of middle of the road, right? So almost $87,000. That's a pretty – but then they live in California. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's a pretty jack of all trades kind of guy. Somebody who can do content and a little paid and a little SEO and all this kind of stuff and community and that's I love the term actually just because they can do a little bit of everything. But Dave, so the thing I take away from the team structure, and we worked with Buffer a little bit when they were getting their podcast started. So at Podcast Mode, we worked with Buffer a little bit to kind of strategize and share some of the things we knew about podcasting with them. So they have one director of marketing, Kevin Lee, who writes a lot of their blog posts, or publishes them at least, and then 9 direct people that report up to him. And that's kind of a lot for one manager, I think. You know, so like I think you typically want like 6, 7, 8, more than 9 would be like a lot. Like getting above 12 would be like a lot for one person to manage. So I feel like it's a relatively lean team in that you have a lot of people doing stuff and not, you know, a lot of people just making decisions.
I would say it's a very efficient team, because if you've got one person who can manage 9, then those 9 are – they've got to be self-managing.
Yeah.
Like you wouldn't have people that need like ongoing direction. Oh, what should I do now? What's my next step? You know, those are the worst people to manage.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think just the sheer volume of dollars that they spend on salaries is really amazing. It sounds like they have the team kind of nailed down. Like you said, it's an efficient, lean team with a lot of people doing the work and not a lot of people, you know, in middle management or anything like that. The thing that this tells me, though, and this kind of goes to like what can we all learn from this as like maybe smaller businesses than Buffer, is they obviously understand, and I'm sure they have the data around the fact that things like content and community and SEO pay off in the long run a shit ton better than things like advertising, because they spend $73,000 on payroll. And of those people on the marketing team, they have how many people in paid advertising, Dave?
Well,
none. It's not one person's main responsibility.
If I had to guess, I'd say maybe it falls under the product marketer jurisdiction and possibly full stack.
Okay.
But it certainly isn't content, it's not community, and it's not PR,
yeah,
which are the other roles that are out there. And I doubt the director is doing PPC management here.
Sure. Yeah. And the reason that...
At best, maybe 1.5.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's reasonable because their marketing, their direct paid acquisition budget for the month out of $93,000 they spent was
$3,041. $3,000. This was the takeaway that blew my mind. Company that has the large MRR as buffer
is in the social media space.
Is in the social media space, and they're spending $36,000 a year on advertising.
Yeah. Yeah.
What? What? I mean, I would go so crazy as to try to spend $3,000 a month on advertising for Recapture because it has a ridiculously high CLTV.
Mm-hmm.
But these guys, either – I don't even – have you seen their CLTV and their other numbers? I'm trying to think if I have or not.
Yeah, we can look – let me look it up real quick. Okay, so, yep, just looked it up on – so Buffer is part of the Barometrics Open Startups Program. Their lifetime value, $398.
So a $400 LTV, and these guys are spending $3,000 a month on 1.5 million MRR. That's MRR, not ARR.
Yeah. Yeah.
$3,000 a month.
So, I mean, maybe, Dave, maybe it means, we always kind of heard from folks who have done this a long time, like Rob Walling, you know, to have paid acquisition kind of pay off, you need to have an LTV of over $300. Maybe it's that number has moved and that paid acquisition doesn't work unless your LTV is $500 or $1,000 or something like that. And Buffer's learned this the hard way. So they've said paid acquisition doesn't work for us because our LTV is only whatever, $380, whatever we said. Or maybe they said it can work, but content and community and social media or whatever is so much better. I think it's the latter. Yeah, I think it's probably the latter.
My feeling is that the content marketing continues to pay off for them, and that's why they have so much invested in content. I mean, they have two dedicated people on content and two dedicated people on community. So right there, that's nearly half of your marketing budget. Clearly, paid acquisition is not their primary acquisition channel.
Yep.
It can't be.
Yep.
It just can't be.
Yep.
So they're investing their dollars where it pays the most, and that makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm a little surprised. I would have thought that paid acquisition might have done better for them, but it's kind of shocking to see it's only $3,000 a month.
Yeah. You know what I'd love to see that this makes me think of is you look at books like Traction and people talking about where you can get your growth from. And I mean, clearly Buffer is, you know, doing $1.5 million a month MRR. They might just have one real acquisition channel, and that's content. They're certainly not spending a lot of money on other stuff that like costs money, like social media or like paid advertising or going to conferences. I mean, they talk in this article about that they have an annual retreat for their team, but they also have a conference budget for every person on their team. And so I think going to conferences is a big part of that, but that's, you know, things like community that I would say is building that up is just like building your blog up or building your social media channels up is kind of evergreen in that as long as you keep doing that and keep doing, community engagement and going to conferences and things like that, it will continue to pay off. Getting that started is more difficult, but I think for a company like Buffer, they've got the engine going of content and of community and of conference presence. So keeping that going is worth it. The thing I wonder about, Dave, is like they're, whatever, years, light years ahead of folks like us. What does this mean for a business that's really just getting started or just getting started and really marketing, you know, so you're doing $1,000 or $10,000 or $15,000 a month. Should you look at what Buffer does and say, I'm just going to focus on content and like real marketing channels? Or should you say, I can figure out how to make Facebook ads work for my business because a lot of other people do it? I don't know.
I have an opinion on that. I don't know if it's, you know, ironclad or anything like that, but when you're looking at somebody who's making 1.5 million AR or MRR, I keep wanting to add an A in there, and it's monthly. You can't say that those tactics are going to work for somebody who's still struggling to get their first 1,000 MRR. And to say that content is working for these guys, I mean, when I was investing in content for Business Directory and trying to invest in content for Recapture, that's expensive. It's slow. It's a long game. You know, you're looking at 9 months to start even seeing any results of traffic or conversions out of that, because you have to build up a brand and a presence. And, you know, Buffer's been around for years at this point.
Yeah.
So for them, I'm guessing that this is an investment in the flywheel. Like, the flywheel will eventually slow down if you don't keep pushing it a little bit every year and adding a few more things and keeping people at the top, or keeping your brand at the top of their mind.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see that their investment reflects that very strongly, because, you know, if you look at their – and by the way, I looked at the section in the advertising and marketing here. They did not spend any money on display ads or sponsorships this year. They said that they dabble only in search ads and social media. And by social media, I think it's amusing to show that they said – basically, it's $80 on Pinterest, $26.30 on Twitter, and $500 on Google. Oh, and by the way, that got shut down today. So I'm guessing that is not going to be in their October or November budgets.
Yeah.
Maybe it's still AdWords. I don't know. But it looks like mostly they're doing Facebook Instagram ads to the tune of almost $2,500. So if you're a small person, I think you've got to find the channel that's most effective at getting your message out in the easiest way possible. And Facebook ads still give you that, even if you're not necessarily a Buffer-sized company.
No, that's a great point. I mean, out of $3,000 on paid acquisition, almost all – yeah, for all intents and purposes, all of it was spent on Facebook ads. So, I mean, I think you're saying – if you're going to spend money on paid acquisition, Facebook, obviously from Buffer's example, is the place to be, Facebook/Instagram. Whether you're in a a social media type industry like Buffer is or not, I think it can apply everywhere. These people that say, oh, Facebook ads don't work for B2B, bullshit. I think people are just not doing it right. We are in a similarly kind of soft B2B or B2 prosumer, whatever you want to call it, thing with Castos, to where a lot of our customers are not businesses, big businesses, but we have a lot of people that are businesses, and we're starting to dabble in some Facebook ads and retargeting, and it's you know, the early signs are solid for us. But I think even if you're selling, you know, enterprise level stuff, things like Facebook ads can definitely help. Even just for top of the funnel stuff, you might not be like retargeting someone from Facebook back to make a purchase, but it definitely can be the thing that opens the top of the funnel for you. And then it's up to you to do the rest of the work from there with things like maybe Google retargeting or, you know, email marketing and things like that. But yeah, I mean, it's cool to see that surely they've tried it all, right? They've tried all the paid acquisition channels, and Facebook is really coming out on top, which is a cool takeaway.
Yeah, well, obviously, if you've got 10 people in your marketing department, you're not going to be hiring 10 idiots, and Buffer has plenty of smart people working there all across the board, not just in marketing, but in engineering and ops and at the top with management, all of that. Obviously, they're a huge thought leader in many different ways. So I think it's a fair assessment to say that, you know, they have probably taken a lot of time to experiment on these things here and figure out what's working, what's not, double down on the things that are the most successful. And so what we're really seeing here is the output of those experiments for Buffer. But yeah, that doesn't mean that's like a blanket strategy. Everybody should be investing in content. You know, if you look at the percentage of people here, that you should have 20% dedicated to community, 20% dedicated to content, 10% to strategic partnerships, 10% to PR, you know, and then 20% to product marketing and onboarding. I don't think you can think of it that way. I think if you're trying to evolve your product, you know, you obviously have to concentrate on certain things first. Like if you have a really crappy onboarding experience, you're not going to get anybody no matter how many ads you put out there. So you can have the best pay-per-click campaign in the world, but as soon as they sign up for your product and see that it sucks, they're out of there. Yep. So, you know, obviously paying attention to the right thing at the right time. If you don't have anybody using your product, there's no community to manage. So there's no point in doing that, right?
Yeah, it's kind of the life cycle of your business and how you're acquiring customers and what the most important thing is, right?
Yeah, and I'm not even sure that everybody would need a community. Like, the recapture community. I don't even know what that is, or like the business directory community. We have forums and there's some stuff that gets shared out there, but I wouldn't say that like community is one of the strong things about the plugins. There are people out there that are using it, but everybody's use cases are a little bit different and we become a focal point and a hub for that. But you know, it's not like Buffer where I think there's a group of people that are trying to actively figure out how do I crack this nut of social media and sharing and make this work in a reasonable, repeatable, ongoing manner.
Yeah.
Which is a very different thing. Like with directories, once somebody gets their directory set up for their local listings in, you know, wherever Canada, then, you know, somebody else who's down in Costa Rica doing an ecotourism thing doesn't really care about what's going on up there in Canada.
Yep.
That's just, you know, they're doing their own thing. So community doesn't fit. But with other stuff, you know, content marketing, that one fits, I think. But again, that's a long, long game kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, Dave, one of the other things that I think merits talking about is they break down their marketing stack, the software tools they use for marketing. They use 28 paid tools, they said, on a regular basis. And they break it down by total amounts and percentages in this article. But I think it's interesting that email marketing and website hosting constitute the majority of what they spend their money on. They spend 36% of their marketing budget on WPNG or on MailChimp and MailChimp credits. The next biggest one is 30% almost on WPNG, so hosting their blog.
Right, that's 76% of their tool budget right there on just those two things.
Yeah.
And their tool budget, by the way, is exactly the same size as their advertising budget. That's also something I thought was hilarious. They're spending as much on tools as they are on paid ads.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think it's just like kind of the power of things like automation and making the people that are working on this their lives so much easier is to spend money on this stuff so that those people can work on things that are more productive and creative. But the other one that I think is interesting, we talked about this, is Wootrick for NPS score, like 18%, so that is $370. And then PR software, $500. You know, I would imagine when you're a business the size of Buffer that things like PR start becoming important. For you and I, doing a PR campaign probably isn't gonna mean much, but I mean, Buffer has so much authority in their space that they can say, like, we publish this thing and it's an authoritative piece on XYZ, and so things like PR really, really help. But I think, you know, focusing on PR for folks our size probably doesn't make a lot of sense. But it was interesting to look at how they break some of this down and some of the tools they use. There weren't a lot of really big surprises here for me, which makes me feel good, I guess, you know.
Well, I mean, I guess what surprised me is that it was so mundane. Like, I think there's this fantasy in my mind that when you get to a certain size, like if you're a WP Engine or a Buffer, you know, you're up there, you've got lots of employees and you've got all of this stuff going on and there's different teams and, you know, all of this complexity naturally means you must have more tools. You must have more exotic tools. You must have more expensive tools. You must be doing things very differently. And all of that just sort of got, you know, pop. Yep. Yep. By looking at this here, it's like, wow, this is all pretty lame.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean, like, there's just nothing here that's like making me go, oh man, there's something I really wish we had, or I really wish we could afford. Like, I'm using WP Engine too. I'm just not spending $1,200 a month on it. You know, I'm spending a tenth of that.
Right. Well, the nice thing I think is you look at this and say like, well, that's not a barrier to, I'll say, entry or to success, right? That's not the reason that you're not doing $1.5 million a month, right? It's like, okay, they, you know, put their pants on the same way we do, one leg at a time. They're using the same MailChimp that you could use in WP Engine and all this kind of stuff. And that's really nice. I mean, I'm sure their processes and workflows are more complicated because they have 10 people on the team. But for you and me to have access to the same tools that a business that's doing this kind of revenue is doing is super encouraging, I think, to say like, cool, well, it's not the tools that are the reason that, you know, I'm not there, so I could get there doing the same thing because I'm on like the right path, you know?
Right, right.
From a tools perspective, at least. We got the geeky stuff figured out. Now it's the hard part, right?
Yeah. And in fact, here's another takeaway that's kind of interesting, I guess. If you take the sum of the advertising budget and the software budget, it's still only 2/3 of what they spend on travel and lodging and benefits and perks.
Yeah.
And that – yeah, the people stuff. So what that really says to me is your sanity and togetherness as a group and common purpose and just understanding, hey, you know, you need downtime and you need human time and it isn't about working to death and it isn't about, you know, that they're putting their money where their mouth is. So they're talking about the same kind of things that we're hearing from others like, you know, Basecamp and those guys and not working yourself to death. Buffer's in the same thing. I couldn't quote a specific blog article, but I'm sure I've heard Joel mention this either on tweets or in specific blog articles here where they value getting together, doing conferences, having a retreat as a company, valuing, you know, remote work, all of the things that we as bootstrappers want to have ourselves. And I think that's nice to see in the budget here as a concrete line item that's clearly a priority for them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, Basecamp really came to mind when we started talking about prioritization of people over tools and things like paid acquisition that might be a little transient or something like that is, you know, working smarter, working sanely, investing in things that work in the long run and not the quick hit of adrenaline that is like paid acquisition maybe. I don't mean to sort of poo-poo paid acquisition because I think it is something that can help boost things, but maybe isn't like the core strategy for you for the long run, because you just keep having to optimize and invest in it. Things like content, you could get that running and you still have to keep working on it and doing it. But I think like as you're looking to grow really big, it might have more of a flywheel effect than things like paid acquisition. So,
yeah. I'm trying to come up with a mental analogy that is like paid acquisition and meth addiction.
And I
just can't quite pull it out because, you know, paid acquisition doesn't make you lose your teeth and end up in jail. So
it might. I don't know. I've had some bad experiences with it. Not that bad, thankfully.
No, not that bad. Not that bad.
Oh, gracious. Yeah, so I mean, I think this is a cool article. I think all the stuff Buffer puts out about how they run their business is really helpful for all of us to say, like, okay, how does a big business do it? What can I learn from this to take away to what I'm doing now? And then as I hopefully look to get kind of on the same path and towards the same level as them, what things can I take away to start running my business more like they are? So yeah, this is a great article. We'll definitely link to this in the show notes, but it's open.buffer.com/marketingbudget. So yeah, definitely check it out. And yeah, let us know what you guys think. You know, what are you spending your time and money and resources and people power on? And does this kind of make you think any differently about that? And kind of what your prioritization is. So you shoot us a message, podcast@roguestartups.com, or leave a comment below this post. And thanks so much, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to roguestartups.com to learn more.